Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
We now return with Aaron Reed discussing Archives of the Sky on Kickstarter Now, and there may be some offhanded discussion about Teslas and space whales. It's not like we ever get on tangents, right? Enjoy. Now, the name Archives of the Sky, how did you come up with that name, and what does it mean to you?
So it's actually a phrase from one of my favorite books, which is not science fiction, actually. It's a book called The Street of Crocodiles that was written in the 1940s in Poland. It was written by this guy who was basically just like a school teacher in this small town his whole life. He never sort of like went out and had any adventures. And he wrote this book about his town, but it's just filled with all this like incredibly imaginative imagery and just sort of like the worlds in this guy's head about like how he imagined, you know, it's lots of kind of magical realism and stuff like that, but like imagining seeing like storm clouds as like giants coming through the town, or there's just all kinds of stuff in this book that's just sort of mind-blowing imagery. And there's this phrase in there that just caught my eye at one point reading it. I think it's describing someone dying, but it's something about how their thoughts were slowly rolling back into the immense archives of the sky. And I was like, oh, man, that's a good phrase. So at some point when I was working on this game, that phrase popped back into my head again. And I was like, oh, that would be a good title for this thing.
Yeah.
But I like it because it sort of suggests sci-fi without sort of literally having a sci-fi word in it, like stars or galaxies, like sky is kind of a nice image. Originally in the game, there was a concept called the archive. Well, actually, I guess this is still in there. It's just a much more minor point. But if you're playing multiple sessions, you take the bits that you liked from that game and put them in an archive so that when you play again, you can remember like, oh, okay, right. Like these were the, you know, the sentient AIs who were trying to control the universe and be the game master for the universe. And these were the, you know, whatever force was trying to stop them. But that notion suggests like a big part of the game is that you're really far in the future. Your characters have like sort of seen it all already. You're effectively immortal. And you're being faced with this new challenge that actually is sort of challenging you for the first time in a long time. And I think Archives of the Sky kind of captures that notion of like, you know, these people have seen all of galactic history when they're starting the story. So like, where do they go from there?
So if I had a scenario I had a group and we ran through that scenario and a whole bunch of things happened. And then I had a new game. Could you do it almost like an anthology, I guess, where the next storyline that we make is built off of the events that happened in the previous scenario that we had done?
Yeah, it's pretty free form. So it's really kind of up to the players. Like you could do sort of like a direct sequel, right? Like more traditional role-playing style, like just what happens next from the last game you played. You could, you know, very easily do something like let's jump way forward and imagine that a lot of other things have happened, right? So it's pretty much up to how the players want to do it. And, you know, again, I mean, you could just play multiple times and each time, you know, make totally new characters, totally new setting.
Because I kind of like the idea that you could do almost a campaign where every time you start fresh, you're about 10 years on from the last thing that happened. And so I'm sure by the time you get about 3 or 4 scenarios in, things are banana nut butters.
Yeah.
pretty much.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, even in one game, how quickly people will like adopt the language or the norms or whatever. Right. Like you really feel like you've established this whole like little miniature culture by the end of a session.
Yeah.
So when you like extend that over multiple things, it's like, yeah, you build up, you know, the history and all of that stuff, which is really cool.
Excellent. Cool. I thought Alex was about to say something earlier.
That was a nice dramatic pause right there.
Well, you know, those are important for storytelling games.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, there isn't a dramatic pause mechanic, though.
It's funny you should mention that.
Oh.
There is not in the game, but Lovecraft-esque that I mentioned earlier has this thing I really like where, so I have a reflection in Archives, right, where you say out loud what you're thinking. Lovecraft-esque does this thing where you basically silently do that. So I think that's called leaping to conclusions in that game. But after each scene, everyone stops and quietly for a moment thinks about everything that happened and writes down like what they think the ultimate horror is going to be at the end of the game. So, right, it's very much about like these Lovecraft style stories. So the main character is seeing these like mysterious hints of something and getting these clues. Everyone after each scene writes down where they think all the clues are going. And they don't share that with anyone. They don't say it out loud, but they just incorporate that then into their next scene. And what's really cool about that is that it means that every new clue that's introduced makes sense according to some like cosmology of what's happening, right? Like it's not just like making up a clue without knowing the answer. Like everything that's introduced ties into something. Each of those people are probably thinking of a different answer. And as more the game goes on and more clues are introduced, you know, that gets shifted around. But I really liked that notion of everyone actually pausing to like think of an explanation for what was happening. I think that that's another reason in a lot of games you don't tend to see coherent stories, is it's hard to talk and think at the same time about a plot, right?
Sure.
So actually like making that space for people to just think about the story, I thought was really interesting. And the verbal reflection in my game is a little bit inspired by that.
It's almost impossible for me to think and talk at the same time. Says a lot. I figured Alex would have a quippy comeback.
Nope, didn't need to. So what really drove you to storytelling games? I know you said earlier that you have done like fiction writing. So what is it about telling a story that way that really you enjoy and you wanted to make by doing so?
Yeah, I think part of the reason I sort of got into that style a few years back was, like I say, I'd done a lot of stuff with computer story heavy games. And it's been really interesting to me how this whole genre of tabletop story games has sort of emerged in a sense kind of as a reaction to what computer RPGs do really well now, right? So like when D&D first came out, you know, all the stuff about combat, about like movement on a map, building up like, you know, factions and all this kind of stuff didn't exist anywhere else, right? But now we have digital games that do a lot of those things. So a lot of the sort of indie role-playing games has sort of moved and been like, well, what are things that computers aren't good at yet, right? So it's sort of fascinating to me from that perspective, the ways people have devised mechanics and rules and systems for things that, you know, like inventing stories that are still hard for computers. Right. I actually did, a few years ago, I finished a PhD into interactive narrative, mostly focusing on digital games. But I did, as I was starting to play these games, I actually sort of like really got into this notion of like, man, like there's a lot of amazing things happening in these games that, people who make computer games don't know anything about at all. Right. Like there's still the sense of like, oh, well, no one knows how to tell a story, right? Like generating a story from scratch is something, you know, completely impossible for a computer to do well. But like Dungeon World and Apocalypse World, right? Like those games literally have an algorithm that the game master follows to ensure that a compelling story happens, right? There's like specific things that the GM is allowed to do at specific moments. And that's really interesting to me because it's like proceduralizing a process we think of as being very mystical and, you know, hard to understand. So yeah, that was part of my interest road into all of this stuff. But I mean, also just like, I've always been a storyteller. I would often play D&D campaigns with my friends where, you know, we had a combat like every two or three games. So, so I've always been pretty like heavy on the storytelling side of role-playing just in general.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, when you put a combat system into a game, people really want to use that. it's got like, well, it's there. I'd really like to use it. Yep. Roll for initiative. I need to use this. Yeah, I feel like computer games by nature have to have pretty rigorous mechanics over storytelling anyway to make them function.
That is how programming
is. Yes, exactly. I'm programmed too, Alex, to ask questions forever. No,
NathanBot is, though.
NathanBot is, yeah, but he's just in beta. We haven't really perfected him yet. But he would love this game. He loves making up scenarios. We learned that much.
Space Krakens?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Versus Clown Otters. It's the best. That would be an interesting scenario to play out, Alex. You want to try that?
I don't know. Nope.
No?
Nope.
Oh.
I'll add those both to the idea prompts list and
good
in the archives book.
Space Krakens.
Mime Otters. Clown Otters. It was clown.
Are you okay, Nathan?
Nope. Nope. Sorry, I replaced myself with Nathan Bot for 5 minutes so that he could come in and make some suggestions.
Quality content. It's
quality content. He just has like a list of 5 things and just reiterates on them all the time. It's terrific. Space pirates. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a thing.
That actually would be a thing. Oh, space whales. We could do Star Trek. That the one where they had the whale.
Or Doctor Who.
Oh, or Doctor Who. There was a whale in that too. I remember
there's void whales all over.
Ooh, love void whales. There would be a cool scenario to play around with. I guess you can use pretty much anything that that is pre-existing as a jumping off point, right?
Yeah, more or less. So one of the biggest thing you need is that you need to have a group of characters who have really bought into or sworn allegiance to or something, some sort of like higher concept than them, right? So in Archives, that's their house, which you create. That sort of premise could work in a lot of scenarios, right? So I haven't actually done this, but I think you very easily could run a sort of Star Trek-like game, right? Where the Federation is the house. The reason it's sci-fi, right, is like I was saying, that sort of helps people sort of connect to big issues in this sort of like expanded way. But I think you could run it... like a Western where you're a bunch of like, you're like a posse enforcing the law, but you're out far away from civilization. This is another thing in the game is that there's no faster than light travel or communications or anything. So, which is specifically in there so that the characters can't like appeal to any other authority for help. They have to resolve the situation on their own. So yeah, there's a couple things that you sort of need to make it work. But yeah, I think you totally could run it in other kinds of contexts. And definitely lots of sci-fi, existing sci-fi genres too.
Can I use wormholes?
So only if, so this is the core thing. Like the game doesn't work if you can say, well, let's ask like headquarters what to do, right? Like you have to be isolated for the dilemma so that the decision there is like entirely your fault, basically, if it goes wrong.
I was thinking Farscape-esque.
Yeah, like you've been transported somewhere else, but you can't get back. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That could totally work.
And you know, you start going crazy having a neural clone of your nemesis in your head, you know.
Yep. All good ideas.
Oh, I want to watch Farscape again.
That's the resolution at the end is let's just watch Farscape and see how John Crichton got out of it. I'm sure that will be the solution. Yeah. And then John Crichton meets Captain Picard out there and is like, hey, what's up? Can you get me home?
Crossover. Yep.
Oh yeah. Mashup. Absolutely.
Zap Brannigan comes
by. Oh, yeah, no, Zap Brannigan destroys everything. That's how Zap Brannigan works. A Futurama scenario would be over very quickly, I imagine.
The sun would blow up much sooner, like 3 minutes
much,
in.
much sooner.
It would be good news, everyone. The sun has exploded.
Now, you will get renewed at least twice, but your runs may be fairly short.
Or Futurama.
Oh, well, rest in peace temporarily, Futurama, until you inevitably come back again. It's only a matter of time. Yeah, I think that those are all good jumping off spots. Alex, what would you do if you actually could make a scenario yourself?
I thought it was a group effort, Nathan.
Okay, fine. Do you want to make an effort with me to come up with a scenario?
Just no.
Why not?
Giant space lice, that's why.
Oh, space lice. That would be interesting. It would be like a Jonas Salk sort of, you know.
They'd be head crabs, you know, head huggers, face huggers, whatever.
Are the space lice on the space whales, or are they
I mean, whales don't have hair, so probably not.
Oh, that's a good point.
Space whales might, though.
Why would they have hair?
Because it's cold in space.
It's not cold in space.
It's insulation.
They need.
It depends if you're facing a star or you're not facing a star, Nathan.
Well, maybe they have photoreactive hair. You ever think about that?
No. I think you've really got the right, you know, kind of creativity to really, like, you know, dig into this game and
absolutely
make some really great things happen.
Oh yeah, this seems like a really good idea. Of course, the inevitable problem is the only thing we're going to accomplish is eliminating space lice from a space whale.
I mean, that's a noble goal. So
it is a noble goal.
I'm just imagining
save the space whales.
Just imagine like going into an asteroid field and someone's like, "Those aren't asteroids. They're space lice."
we must
die. That'd be terrifying.
Oh God.
Except one of the asteroids is really a potato.
Wait. Okay, so now is it just basically Mr. Potato Head, the RPG?
No, I was making a Star Wars reference.
Oh.
Right. Empire visual effects.
Yep.
Oh.
One of the asteroids was a potato.
Oh. That's fun.
Apparently Nathan didn't know that.
I didn't know that. Although it would explain why there was a worm in one of them.
I guess so.
Yeah. We are learning so much about the Star Wars world today. I mean, I guess if I was trying to get away from a giant worm in a potato, that would be a scenario.
You would just blow the potato up.
Or bake it.
In an exploding star. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we have...
Set your lasers to bake.
Do we have a microwave beam that we can aim out at the potato? And we can feed a planet with asteroid potato.
I feel like if you threw that potato at a planet, it would fry in the atmosphere and shatter into fries.
The space whale is hungry. It needs baked potato space fries. Oh, see, the problem is that this would be the scenario that we would end up dealing with when there was like a planet that was about to get destroyed. We would solve the one where we feed the space whale, you know, microwave asteroid fries, but we would never get around to actually saving the people on the planet. So I guess that would be like a mixed victory. It would, on the one hand, we did achieve the one goal of feeding a giant space whale these giant asteroid fries. But on the other hand, millions of people died when the sun exploded.
I mean, true, but nothing involving fries can be a total loss. So
that's true.
This is true.
That's true. I mean, I feel like when it comes to playing Archives of the Sky, it's really all about perspective.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. There's very few sort of ground truths in it, right? Like even the sort of randomness generation isn't like you win or you lose. It's like, what does this word mean to you? So, and a lot of the sort of core conflict is about like in your interpretation of, you know, this value your character believes in, you know, what's right or what's wrong. So the house values, right? One of them you make up your own, but the first one is always we will always remain human. And that produces that tends to produce a lot of the conflicts around in many of the games, because the definition of what is human in a, you know, epic sci-fi scenario becomes very flexible. So is your perspective on that right? That like that means we should never modify our DNA. Is your perspective that means we should never give up our ideals, right? Like people, characters will have big arguments about what this means, and no one's right or no one's wrong, right? It's just totally what in character they think, you know, the answer to that is. So
right. I was watching something not too long ago that I guess was more of a philosophical question, but the idea of personhood and that being a person is not necessarily equatable to being human. Like being a person as a larger definition is about like having a consciousness and having a will all your own and those terms, but it doesn't necessarily equate directly to you being human. So are you thinking like the characters have to be a human as a species, or do they have to represent a person in how people interact?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. The rules give you no guidance on that at all.
Oh, good.
It's totally up to what you and your characters, you know, how you want to interpret that. So, and that's very deliberate, right? So,
excellent. So, I heard a dice fall.
Yeah, I may have dropped.
You dropped a dice. Well, that's fine. Luckily,
it was a failure.
Luckily, in Archives of the Sky, that's inconsequential.
Yeah. What does that one mean to you?
Yes. What does the one mean to you? See, we can conceptualize your die rolls. Like maybe the one isn't a critical failure. Maybe
the one is why the sun exploded.
Maybe though, the one is just the number you picked for your place in line. Like maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Maybe like now serving number one.
Yeah. Yeah. See, there's always a silver lining if you look at it the right way, Alex. I mean, that's the beauty of storytelling. If I took Archives of the Sky and I made a scenario that might be in the future but is set on Earth, would that work?
Yeah, I think it could. Again, right, you sort of need to keep these ideas of the players or the characters don't have help they can defer to. They need to sort of be, you know, have allegiance to this higher force they believe in, or, you know, ideology or something. But yeah, like someone suggested to me, it would be really interesting to do a sort of like post-apocalyptic, campaign with this. And I haven't tried that, but I could see that working.
I was actually just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like Fallout sort of thing.
I was like, what if you do like a post-apocalyptic tragic horror and mix Archives of the Sky with Ten Candles?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because I mean, if you think about Fallout, you know, taking the goat feels like it would be pretty much your baseline for how the world works. You just you go for your occupation test.
Right.
And figure out how you interact with the world. Actually, what I was thinking about, and I guess it's closer to contemporary, was the idea of like X-Files. This idea that, you know, you could have your Mulder character and your Scully character, and they end up out in the woods in some rural place, and something has befallen this town, and you're sort of isolated, you're sort of cut off, and it's more of a mystery, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea of like moral pragmatism as we get into the scenarios of like, did we succeed or fail? It feels like that's almost every X-Files episode.
Yep.
So I was kind of thinking about that. But now, is it something that you could do as a contemporary storyline?
So you could. I've wanted to try this. I have a theory that it won't work as well, but I haven't actually validated this, because I think the genre, and I think that doesn't, you know, necessarily have to be sci-fi. It could be other things, but it sort of gives people permission to take the values seriously, right? Like, I think people are sort of naturally shy about, you know, like if you were playing this in a contemporary society and you're like, well, my character is an alcoholic who's struggling with, you know, whether his duty to his son is more important than his, you know, tragic desire to erase his past. I think most people would have a harder time role playing that and not feeling self-conscious about it. Than if you phrase that as, you know, the nanobot collective has taken over my body and is forcing me to drive this planet towards the sun. It always comes down to the sun. Killing
things, really. Yeah. Always.
But when you have that sort of like semi-ridiculous edge to it, you don't feel as self-conscious like diving into it, I find. I think obviously with the right group of people, you could totally make it work with a contemporary setting. But the nice thing about the sci-fi again is it just kind of it takes off the edge of seriousness about it and gives people permission to kind of like play a bit more, which I think helps a lot to get to like the core of what the game's about.
Because I keep thinking to myself, like, I always think about like Star Wars. Could you do like a Star Wars scenario? But technically, Star Wars happened a long time ago, so it's actually technically history. It's not in the future.
It's
so
in the Archives of the Sky.
It's in the archives. So I guess the space part is maybe more consequential than the time part.
Yeah, and I think Star Wars could work. Like you can imagine a group of Jedi or something, but it's trickier than Star Trek, which is more based around this idea that the core characters have this shared moral code that they are trying to like navigate, right? And things like the Prime Directive and all this kind of stuff.
Because the Force, you know, depending on who you are, might mean something very different.
Right.
there's not a lot of core tenets. Well, I guess the Jedi kind and the Sith kind of had core tenets, but they interpret them in very different ways.
And all the different Jedi had different, you know, relationships with the Force.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And you have like the gray Jedi that don't really see things the same way as maybe light side Jedi do. And it gets kind of tricky.
And then you have Qui-Gon Jinn.
Let's pour a 40 out for poor Qui-Gon Jinn who made it through the one movie. Congratulations. Sorry, spoilers, folks, if you haven't seen Phantom Menace 20 years later. Oops.
Good job.
Sorry.
You just ruined a movie for a generation.
No, I think that Phantom Menace ruined the movie for a generation, Alan. And previous ones too. So the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the levels and the goals, things that you're looking forward to as maybe stretch goals for the future.
Totally. Yeah. So it's pretty straightforward. Like mostly what the reason I'm doing the Kickstarter is I want to have someone who is good at these things to do the layout of the book and art for it. It's funny because the previous time I did a Kickstarter, it involved a printed book that was part of a digital game that used augmented reality. And my partner and I did all of the layout and art and everything for that book ourselves. So it's sort of a thing where like I could do it, but I also know how much work it is. So this time around, I'm like, maybe I'll just like pay someone to do all that stuff and be happier. That's sort of where the budget's going. And the tiers are sort of, you can get PDF, you can get print book. There's some cool tiers where you can sort of like contribute story ideas. So you can, if you have, you know, great ideas like space whales, you can send them my way and I can decide to include them or not, as the case may be, depending on the quality of said idea. And then the final tier, which I'm actually really excited about, is I will play a game of Archives with you via Skype and your friends. Which is really cool to me because obviously that will be fun to play, but it will also be a really cool way to like get directly involved with like making up stories with backers, which I'm really excited about. So, we had a good, first day, so things are looking really promising. So I'm excited.
So I'm looking forward to having some existential crises, through storytelling in this game. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
Okay. Right, Alex? That's cool, right?
Yeah. I mean, Nathan's going to have lots of existential crises, mostly when the sun explodes.
Oh, yeah. Trying to...
'cause he will no longer exist.
I had friends on that star.
Yep. Not anymore.
No.
How did they get on there?
Uber.
Are they using the Falcon Heavies now?
You know, there was a reason that Musk took that Tesla into space. There was an Uber service to Mars.
It's like a good sci-fi drunk Uber story, right? Like, yeah. It accidentally took me to the surface of the sun. Man. I had too much to drink.
I
couldn't believe my bill.
I hope this fair worked out in my favor. Boy,
to be fair, if you wanted to send that Tesla to the sun, he sent it in the right direction first.
You know, it's going to be that kind of thing in the distant future when we have, you know, ships that can go farther and faster. They're going to come across it and they're going to say to themselves, why did we send a car by itself into space? Did we not have anything else we could send? Like, we were testing a payload. Oh, okay. So who calls dibs on the car now? Because
I don't think you'd want to use the car at that point. The paint's going to be all stripped off.
Good body shop will be able to handle that.
The mileage will be terrible.
Oh yeah, mileage. I mean, the transmission will be fine.
That's true. The engine should be fine. But
I mean, all the fluids are probably gone from it at this point.
But once you got it into like a cargo bay or something and you could, you know, tool around with it, I can see this as like a great galactic road trip story, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're supposed to get those tune-ups every 2,000 miles or whatever. So after, like that. You know, a couple dozen billion miles, definitely going to be due for some of that.
I think about like, this would be Ferris Bueller's day off in space. He finds like, oh, dude, I found a Tesla just like sitting in it. We're going to go on a road trip now.
You know, if it ends up hitting a celestial body, like if it ends up hitting Mars, which I think it's going to miss. But if it ends up hitting anything, that's going to be like the biggest car crash ever. Oh.
I hope they have good insurance.
Yep.
Do insurance companies cover my car was launched into space and hit an asteroid?
I think that's probably an add-on that you have to ask for specific.
That's act of God, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
The platinum policy to cover that.
Act of SpaceX. That's a policy that they never knew they'd need until now.
No, you know what you do? You claim it. When you call the insurance company, you go, my car was hit by a meteor.
And they go, oh, okay. Can I have photographic evidence of that?
And you just tell them it destroyed the whole car.
Yeah. Now, they don't have to know that the car ended up in a trajectory that hit the asteroid. All right.
I mean, as far as I know, insurance doesn't have any stipulations that say
that it has can't to be on the planet
of Earth's orbit.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen a policy that says you have to be within 2,000 miles of the planet's surface.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true. You know what I like is that actually we are actively coming up with a great story for Archives of the Sky.
there is a car in the Archive of the Sky.
This is true. Yep. This is true.
It's going to be a car graveyard. That's where we're going to send all our old cars from now on, I guess.
on the Route 66 of space. There's just old cars lying along the side of a hyperspace route.
That's correct. I mean, quite lovely. Yeah.
Instead of Route 66, though, I think it would be like Route Infinity Sign, like just a Boolean loop, just two Boolean loops next to each other. Not the six, just infinity.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Well, you know, we can't have a Tesla that got launched into space. I mean, I'm going to admit that. On the other hand, there are Teslas here on Earth. They're more expensive. If you just came across it in space, I think you could call dibs and just get it for free, but it would cost a lot to get there.
Not to mention the parking.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. And valet service?
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Space is harsh.
Mm-hmm. You should just go to a valet sometime and be like, hey, so I need you to get my car for me. They'll be like, sure, what is it? It's a red Tesla Roadster. Okay, do you know where it's parked? Yeah, it's in orbit.
It's in a parking orbit around Mars.
Yeah.
Geosynchronous orbit.
Yeah. It's going pretty fast right now, but there's no driver in it. I think it might be dangerous. Have you called the proper authorities? I don't know who handles this kind of thing. I don't know what legal body has precedence over this particular scenario. We haven't thought that far enough in the future.
Space DMV.
Space DMV, yeah.
Space Pope.
Oh my God. Do you know how long and arduous the line would be for Space DMV?
Yeah, I don't even want to think about that.
It just that goes from here to the moon.
And back.
Archives of the Sky is going on through May 31st.
Yes, that's right.
And so I guess if you want to run a mind experiment revolving around hijacking a Tesla in space,
this is your game.
This is the perfect game for you.
That is your mission.
That is your mission. It's
and if you fail, the sun explodes.
The sun explodes. The space is fun. Dangerous. Be careful in space, folks. So, Alex, when you take a road trip to the sun, what are you packing with you?
Elon Musk, so he can drive his Tesla back.
Oh, that would be very nice of you. I thought you were going to say like trail mix or something.
Marshmallows.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Marshmallows. Make sure to bring some chocolate and some graham crackers.
They're going to be asteroid size, though. Like Stay Puft Marshmallow Man-sized marshmallows.
Oh, okay. Did they use one of those for an asteroid in Empire Strikes Back?
Why would you use... No. No way.
You know, you char those up, they look kind of like an asteroid. Anyway, Aaron, if folks want to learn more about Archives of the Sky, where could they go?
So if you just Google Archives of the Sky, it should come up right away. You'll hit the Kickstarter page, and then there's a project website that has some things like an example of people playing and images and stuff like that. So either of those is a good place to find out more.
Excellent. Excellent. The Kickstarter page, you can find it pretty easily there as well. You have until the end of the month. End of the month.
That's right. Yep.
Back the project. So do that. You before you fly into the sun, go to the Kickstarter page.
Right. Very important to do that first. Yeah.
Yes.
Do it before the sun explodes.
Yeah.
Before that. Yes.
If you don't go to the Kickstarter page, the sun might just explode. You don't want to chance that.
You never know. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, this is actually a public safety announcement. We never told anybody, but that's really what this is. Alex, if people want to find out more about Delve, where could they go?
You can find out more about Delve over at delvecast.com.
Yep, you can go there and you can find all of the stuff that we do. We do a lot of things, don't we?
I mean, there's more every day, I guess. Yeah, more, sure, why not? More not every day, but
no, not every.
We're adding to it.
Yes, we have several things a week, usually that go up there, and when you go there. We have a little thing in the corner now that says Patreon, and please go and check out our Patreon page, just for the amusement, if nothing else, because the tears are really funny.
Well, the video is funny. The tears need to be reworked, Nathan.
But see, the tears are also listed in the video, so it's kind of all part and parcel. It's just it's just ancillary to the video, pretty much. But you can also find us on all sorts of wonderful podcast applications, such as the iTunes and the Google Play. So please rate and review and subscribe when you go there, because just like the sun, I like stars.
I see what you did there.
Very nice. Oh,
yeah, that's good. I like five of them, even though there's only one star. The analogy breaks down at this point. But it's okay. Now, Aaron, if folks wanted to follow along with what you're doing on any kind of social media platform, is there a way that they could get into contact you that way?
Yeah. So Twitter, I'm at Aaron A. Reed. That's probably the best one to use.
All right. Excellent. You can also find us on Twitter. I am at Citanium.
I am at EXP Limited, and the show is at Delve Podcast.
Yep, and if you want to stay up to date with everything that we're doing, and also maybe jump on and ask us questions to address on the show at some point, please do that. We always like to hear from people. And I suppose with that, we can drive this Tesla right on into an asteroid for the insurance money.
Whoosh.
That's a good use of our money and time, folks. I want to thank Aaron Reed for coming on to talk about Archives of the Sky. Aaron, thank you again for being on.
Yep, been a pleasure.
We learned so much on this show, right?
Are you asking me or him?
I was just hoping somebody would chime in.
No, but I'm not going to say anything.
But apparently that's a no. All right.
Nathan learned something.
I learned a lot of things.
I don't know what.
I learned that space whales can have hair if I want them to.
There are no limits to the human imagination.
Yeah. And also, there is a future in scrubber bots for giant hairy whales. No one knew, but somebody's got to get the lice off of them. That's what right. Lycecapades is now going to be. That's the follow-up to Lycecapades, Alex. It's Lycecapades in space. And we make a curved board, and that represents the whale. It's going to be super fun. It will be great next time we go to BFIG.
There you go.
I'll bring it with me. That'll be cool. All right, everybody. Well, we're going to go on a space road to nowhere right now, but in a super cool car. That's eco-friendly, which doesn't really matter when you're in space, because you're not technically driving it, and inertia pretty much just... You know, it's try not to think too much about it. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
If the sun explodes in space and there's no one around, does it still make a sound?
Yeah, the sound of me going,
But you didn't notice it. Also, the answer is no, because... there is no sound in space.
Well, that's all I had to add to that. Was, well...